prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we review underseen horror movies with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm your co-host, Erica, joined by my co-host, Lance.
Hey, everyone.
Okay, so before we get into our movie for this episode, Lance, I wanted to get an update from you. So since we recorded the Black Cat episode, have you watched the Bang Tango documentary?
I have, yes. And it was entertaining. Okay. I recommend it. It has all the freaking, let me see what I kind of wrote. I mean, everybody can go to my Letterboxd and read. I wrote a pretty lengthy review on a 2-star documentary. But it has like all the rock and roll documentary tropes, the drug addict guitar player, it has the car wreck, it has the crazy rock and roll caricature frontman. But yeah, I lost a little respect for the band after watching it. I'm not gonna lie. If they pass through on tour, I probably will skip it. Unlike probably what I mentioned in the last episode, just because it's just the frontman that's left. Joe Liste, and everybody else is just gone and doesn't like the front man. It's just, it's a funny situation, but yeah, check it out. If you do like 80s rock and you know, the classic rock and roll story, you know, I'll watch anything. So, but, and their catalog, I mean, Someone Like You is basically it. That's the only song you need to hear from their catalog.
Got it. Okay. Duly noted. Yeah. I saw your review and I was like, I don't need to watch this. Lance summed it up very, very well for me. So
yeah, it's you, thanks for sending me that link though. You really kind of, I guess you kind of ruined my Tuesday or whatever day. I didn't get a lot of work done that day. I guess that was last week. Yeah. That was on a Friday and it was good.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hinder your productivity.
I needed it. That's how I needed to kick off the weekend with some Bang Tango. You do get to see them play it live, Someone Like You from Kotze's Black Cat. So that alone is worth the whatever it is, hour and a half.
Okay. So if that hadn't been in there, it would have been like a 1-star review, huh?
Yeah. And they show the video, like the whole video. It's like they obviously, the filmmaker knew that this is the only song that got them on the map. So let's really dig in on this track. But they never mentioned Kotze's Black Cat, and that definitely dropped some stars for me.
Bummer. Okay.
They mentioned Bean and a Wes Craven. They're under a different band name. I forgot what the band name was, but they were in Wishmaster. It was a completely different lineup, but they seem to have a lot of like, you know, pride and Bean, you know, in a film. So I was hoping like, okay, well, let's talk about the Black Cat, but it didn't happen.
All right, well, let's get on to what we're going to cover tonight. Yes. This episode, we are going to be talking about Mill of the Stone Women, which was released in 1960, actually in August of 1960. So happy 60th anniversary, Mill of the Stone Women.
Filmed on a spectacular scale in breathtaking Technicolor, here is the bone-chilling motion picture the critics have called a classic shocker, The Mill of the Stone Women.
Bonjour, Marie, ma mère, tu n'es pas chouette. Visez donc vos chevilles, elles sont pas battes. Elles sont faites pour la danse, olé, olé. Et si je dois prouver...
Why do beautiful young women suddenly turn to stone? Against this eerie background, a twisted mind has plotted a series of sadistic events you wouldn't believe possible until you see them.
It's a corpse.
Handsome Pierre Brice and Europe's fabulous new star, the extravagantly beautiful Sheila Gabel. They say the trouble began with a woman, and you'll see why in the terrifying Mill of the Stone Women. You've never seen anything like the Mill of the Stone Women, for until now, no one has dared tell such a shocking story on the motion picture screen.
Who murdered her? It's the truth, I tell you!
Mill of the Stone Women is the entertainment event of a lifetime.
As of this recording, you can watch this movie on YouTube, which the quality is not great, but it's about the same quality that you'll get from the Shriek Show DVD that was put out. There is also an out-of-print Mondo Macabro DVD, which, as of this recording, was running about $30. So if you really like this movie and want to shell out for it, you can. I'm holding out for the Blu-ray. And then also, as of this recording, it has 745 views on Letterboxd and an overall rating of a 3.4 out of 5. So just to kind of walk through what the movie is about, it takes place in a small village outside of Amsterdam. The main character, Hans, arrives at this windmill, which is called Mill of the Stone Women by the locals. He's there to write a study about this, we'll call it a curious carousel at the mill, which features famous female murderers from history. Once there, he meets its creator. His name is Professor Gregorius Wall. His daughter, Elfie, and Dr. Bolam, who we later find out also lives there to take care of Elfie, who is ill. Now, despite Hans having an attachment to this woman called Lisolette that he grew up with, Hans becomes transfixed with Elfie, and they spend the night together. The next night when they meet, Elfie faints when Hans tells her that he doesn't love her and that they can no longer see each other because he's with Lisolette. And when Hans takes her to the room after she's fainted, he finds her to be dead. The next day, Hans falls into this extended fever dream. And when he comes out of it, he finds Elfie to be alive and well. He's then taken from the mill to the hospital to recover. Once he's gone, it's then revealed that Elfie's father, Professor Wall, and the doctor actually drugged Hans in order to convince him that nothing he saw the night before was real. And so that nobody would believe his story, even though Hans doesn't even know the whole story yet. And so what we find out that the whole story is that Professor Wall and the doctor have a secret lab in the cellar of the windmill where they have been performing blood transfusions for Elfie in order to extend her life. She has, in fact, died many times. But the professor and the doctor have been kidnapping women and giving their blood to Elfie in order to revive her. And then when the transfusion is done, Professor Wall hides the bodies by mummifying them with a serum and then costuming them as the famous murderesses for his carousel display. Hans and his friends discover this plot when they put together that a missing local performer is the carousel's latest display. So then Hans and his friend then set out to save Hans's girlfriend, Lisolette, from becoming the latest victim in this scheme because the doctor has discovered that she has the perfect blood type to cure Elfie permanently. So going through some of the actors in this, it's a strange mix of actors in this. The film is directed, it's an Italian film, but the actors are a mix of Italian, French, and German actors. So we have Pierre Bryce, who is French, as Hans. Celia Gable, who is Italian, as Elfie. Danny Carell, who is French, as Lisolette. Hermann Baum, who is German, if you couldn't tell from the name, as Professor Gregorius Wall, or Elfie's father. And then Wolfgang Preis, who is also German, as the doctor, Dr. Bolam. So like I mentioned, the director is Italian. It's Giorgio Ferroni. He's mostly, most of his catalog is spaghetti westerns. This is the film that he is, I guess, on Letterboxd, at least second most known for. The one he's first most known for is called Night of the Devils. And I actually had this on our list for a possible future episode, but it's in the 900s right now for views. So it's probably going to be over 1K by the time we would get to it. So Lance, I know you watched this too. I watched it a few months ago. What did you think of Night of the Devils, his other popular Italian horror movie?
I loved it. I thought it was great. It had Gianni Garco, who plays Sartana, mm-hmm. who I love all the Sartana movies. He's in 4 of the 5. He plays Sartana himself. And I think he's fantastic in this fucking role. I actually enjoyed it more than The Mill of the Stone Woman, but...
We're going to have our first argument, folks.
Yeah, no, I recommend Night of the Devils. It's a really good kind of eerie, kind of cabin in the woods type story, almost like this weird family's out there. I guess it's like a vampire flick from what I gather from everything. To me, it seems a little more almost zombie-esque the way that they were kind of portrayed.
Yeah, it didn't feel very, it was like... Yeah, it was like this weird, it seemed to be like a hybrid of vampires and zombies. But I mean, Italian horror, I just let go of what's this monster supposed to be logic, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So Gianni Garco kind of is driving off to, I think he's a, what was his job? A lumber salesman or something?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Something weird, because I actually show him at his job a little later. But he's driving to go meet and have some sort of, some sale for his business, and his car breaks down, and he shows up and he walks through these woods and finds this old kind of dilapidated, like completely, it doesn't even look livable. It's like, you know, no ceiling, mm-hmm. Like this barn type area with two kids in there. And there's a whole family in there of, I guess it's a father and a son and a woman who actually reminded me of Lot, of Lisa Latte or Lisa Lett from this movie. I thought it was the same actress when I was looking at it, but they're different. They're yeah. exactly the same. But anyways, he finds out that there's like a witch that's in the woods that they're living in. And at night they kind of board up everything, all the windows, all the doors. And he's very kind of intrigued about this. And they tell him, you can't open the doors. You can't go outside. And the father goes out, one night to find this witch, who I guess is a vampire of some sorts, but to find and kill this witch to break this curse, because this lady's apparently killing everybody, killing the family. Mm-hmm. When he walks up to the house, the father's brother actually was murdered, like, I think it was a month ago, and they had just buried him.
And the guy who's there is like, why did it take so long to bury him? And like, there's all this sort of like weird mystery going on, like what's happening in these people's house, like
it's yeah. And the cast of characters are like really compelling. Like you kind of latch on to they all have their own characteristics and they all kind of work, and keep you intrigued. Like, you know, okay, well, what's going to happen with this dude? What's going to happen with this lady?
Well, it's like, I think it just sort of like one person after the other keeps going outside to like, oh, someone's not back yet. We got to go find them. And like sort of one by one, they're getting picked off by this vampire witch who turns you into a zombie type thing. And then eventually like our protagonist does get away and he comes back and like there's a young woman there who he has developed a relationship with and he goes back to try to save her. But then there's these great shots of like him kind of walking through the forest and like the vampire-ish characters are just sort of like creeping around all around him. So it's got great atmosphere. The plot is very Italian in the sense of like, it doesn't follow any sort of linear structure and make much sense, but it's just, it's enjoyable for sure.
Right. And like a lot of the creepy kids too, like as they mm-hmm. turn into these weird vampire creatures too. And that's very kind of haunting to look at with like blood on their face and stuff.
Yeah. I think like is it a kid who turns her mom into a vampire or vice versa or something like that in there?
Yeah, she bites her mom. She like, for some reason, like rips her blouse open before biting her.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be a burial ground moment for a second there.
Yeah, I actually did too. That's probably why I liked it so much.
All right. So that's Night of the Devil. So we would both recommend that one for Giorgio Ferroni. As far as screenwriters goes, this one has 5 different people credited for it. And it's a mix of Italian, French, and German writers, because in addition to, if you couldn't have guessed from the different backgrounds of the actors, this is a Italian, French, and German co-production. In addition to that, one thing that is interesting that came up is that this is actually the very first Italian horror movie shot in color.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And I wish I could see a better copy of it. Someone, please make a Blu-ray. Also of note is if you do watch this or if you have watched it, the opening credits state that this is based on a short story by Flemish writer Peter van Wegen. That was made up for publicity. So don't go out looking for that story. It does not exist. All right. So we're going to get into more of the film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
First thoughts about this film is it immediately reminded me of a couple of other films. First of all was House of Wax, original Vincent Price. I'm not talking about the Paris Hilton remake or whatever. And also Eyes Without a Face, just because of like the sort of father-daughter underground laboratory surgery type thing going on. So one other thing that struck me is, I guess I kind of wanted to start by talking about Elfie, more specifically her appeal, because she has zero depth to her besides being beautiful. Like, she has no qualms about her father and the doctor killing other women in order to bring her back to life. There's no moment of her confronting them and saying, no, this is wrong. The majority of the time that she's on screen, she's either sleeping or dead. Yet all of the men, the three primary men in this, are in love with her. So Hans, when he first meets her, is immediately attracted to her, even though he ditches her subsequently. The doctor wants to marry her, and her father wants her all to himself. It's not incestuous by any means, but you can tell like his love for her is like so great that he is dedicated his life to making sure that she continues to live despite having this weird condition that causes her to die and is murdering women to keep her alive.
He comes across as like wanting to be the only one in her life, mm-hmm. pretty much.
Yeah. And keeping her sheltered and in her sort of existence. And so to me, it's like this like Rapunzel effect. Like, her appeal is that she has been isolated, sheltered, most importantly, untouched. I know a common trope in plenty of, let's say, Hammer movies, or even something like Hitchcock's Rebecca, or even The Shining, is that like the woman's initial and maybe even sustainable appeal is that those women are like non-confrontational, at least initially. Agreeable, sort of easy to control or manipulate. But this is kind of like a whole new level of that, where her appeal is not just that, but also that she has been like hidden or locked away. There's a lot of things that I really, really love about this movie. And first and foremost is the setting. And like the fact that, you know, I know there's plenty of Italian horror movies that take place in like other countries, but the setting for this was so interesting to me. It takes place in a windmill with a fucking carousel of mummified corpses with a fucking evil laboratory down in the cellar. It's fucking gold, you know?
It is. I mean, from the first shot too, not just like the interior of the mill, which is, you know, kind of creepy, and actually it has a bunch of that neon lighting too that a lot of the Italian horror has. Mm. But the first shot of the movie, where you're kind of on this weird riverbank with like a ferryman, you know, driving these passengers on, or I guess that's where Hans comes out.
Yeah.
The whole exterior shots with like the foggy atmosphere and landscapes, And even like, you know, the shots of the windmill itself and like within the village,
mm-hmm.
everything is like, it's perfect to look at it. That's what this movie is to me. Cause I didn't find any of, like you kind of mentioned with Elfie, I didn't really find any of the characters compelling at all. Like Elfie does have her beauty. Mm-hmm. Hans is like handsome as fuck. You know, he's a good looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then Elfie also has, you know, her affliction that's, you know, keeping you wondering what is, you know, what is this that she has? What's this medical condition that's, you know, causing all this? But other than that, I guess her father really hooked me. I thought he was the best actor in it all. He blew me away. But for me, this movie was just eye candy. I was just looking at everything and then listening to the score because I couldn't get hooked with any of the characters.
Yeah. And we should mention the score. Carlo Innocenzi did it. And that's great too. Like, especially the carousel score. It's just like this, like, broken fucking evil carousel music. It's fantastic.
Yeah, every scene with the carousel is like, you know, just give me an hour and a half of this because this is fucking, it's terrifying. It works so well. But yeah, the score too, like Innocenzi, he does like just like these single struck piano key chords, like ding, ding, mm-hmm. just it really keeps you captivated on what you're watching, and then he'll throw in like some weird choir moans over it. But yeah, it just accompanies the like the haunting like atmosphere and the foggy landscape just perfectly. And from what I read, I think he didn't do many horrors, or this was like his only horror movie.
Yeah, he didn't do much in this realm at all, which is kind of unfortunate. Just like the director who only did a couple of horror movies, like I would have liked to have seen more from both of them.
Yeah, for sure.
When we talk about like the setting and like that an opening scene, and there's also another scene later on where, you know, Hans arrives at the dock and he's looking for, well, where's the windmill? And they say, oh, it's over there. You have to take that ferry. And so you have this sort of symbolic ferryman, you know, taking you across the river to your death even. So I think there's a lot more like sort of understated things. And that's kind of what I like about it too, is like, yeah, it is eye candy. A lot of stuff is understated. And the characters don't really stand out. Like you said, they're not very compelling, aside from probably the father, especially towards the third act.
Yeah.
But I think what a couple of things that really could have helped it for me is more use of it, because it's not like this like foresty landscape or anything like that. It's just like flat sort of foggy grassland. And so when the red-haired woman towards the end, the performer that I mentioned that went missing and got added to the carousel, when she goes missing, I think what really could have added to it is if they had some kind of chase scene outside through like the fog and like maybe even hearing like the creaking of the windmill in the background or something like that, just to like use like the landscape, because all they really like everything was interior shots aside from the couple of shots of them crossing the river to get to the windmill. I would have loved that. And then speaking of like the sound of the windmill itself, so you remember when we talked about the lighthouse after we saw it at Fantastic Fest, and we talked about like that horn in the lighthouse and how it just like, at first it's really imposing and then it just sort of blends into the background as part of the movie, but it's still very ominous. I would have loved it if that sort of creaking of the windmill would have been this consistent thing throughout the movie, but that it just sort of faded into the background as part of it. I think that would have helped it too.
Yeah, that would have. Cause it also, that seems to be the motor for the carousel to operate, right?
The
spinning wheel. So it'd be cool to have like this reminder of like, basically it's just kind of like driving death or something. Like something bad's going to happen.
Something like that. You know what was cute with the windmill too is when they had the little model windmill.
Yeah. It's like you can tell it's because there are some, I guess there's some shots with the real windmill.
Yeah.
But you can tell when it's the model because it's like spinning so fast because it's made of like balsa wood and like, this so thing's going to fly off the rails.
Oh, I love it. So, but
yeah, Ferroni did a great job making the windmill creepy, like with those scenes, you know, with the opening scenes and stuff, when it first shows it, when Hans first gets there, right away, you know, this place isn't going to be safe, which I really wanted to like it. Like, as soon as it started, I was hooked. Even like the cheesy narration that was going on, mm-hmm. just to like quickly introduce Hans. I think the first line was, "Trouble began with a woman."
Yeah.
I was like, okay. He loves women. He is about to change his mind. I'm like, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah.
But then from there, you know, after the beautiful opening, yeah, I just couldn't get into it.
I do think it kind of drags a little bit in the middle, but I think the third act, like, just absolutely makes the movie for me. And I mean, the second act is nothing to sneeze at. Like, it's still gorgeous to look at, and it's not dragging its feet by any means, but there's a few things that, like, I like when Hans and his friend are back at his hotel room and they're like trying to figure out what's happening. And you're just like, are you fucking dense? Like, I mean, everything is in front of you. Figure it out.
Like, well, and the way that come about, like, Ralph believing him, he's like, wait a minute. You've never seen this woman before, but you know she has red hair. You must be telling the truth. And I'm like, what? The whole, like, yeah, then together, it felt like a Scooby-Doo episode to me, because they were like looking at each other and yelling, you know, Lisa Latte, Lisa Lette, and then like running off like Scooby-Doo and Scrappy. Like, it was, I don't know, their relationship was funny because they were trying to, like you said, figure out this, solve this mystery. And they just really were kind of dense, and it was flying over their head the whole time.
Yeah. But I mean, there's just some other like great imagery in there too. There's he's got like he calls it a studio, because the doctor, or the professor, he also teaches art classes at the local, I guess, university. And so he's got a sculpture art studio in the windmill house as well. And one of the like opening shots is like all these mannequin like sculptures of women, and one of them that it just sort of, it's panning and then it stops on one that's like, that's been hanged. I mean, it's just great. And I'm like, all right, this is what I'm in for. I'm completely on board for it. And I think like towards the end, when the carousel is running again, like one of the women in the display actually reminded me of the old lady corpse from Drop of Water and Black Sabbath. Like, it has, like, they have that look to them, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one lady that looked kind of like Zelda from Pet Sematary, kind of like shriveled over and almost wearing a gown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those wax dummies, or those sculptures.
They're mummified.
They're mummified. And he put some sort of solution in them that mummifies them and turns them into some sort of like plaster,
something like that. Yeah,
because there's that one scene where he is inserting this solution into a victim and starts twisting her wrist,
mm-hmm.
and it's the sound effect is so gruesome. It sounds like, you know, they're like rubbing two rocks like slowly together.
Yeah,
like, and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah,
but yeah. Those dead bodies, those mummified bodies were. They were creepy as hell. They were totally effective. And then at the end, like when in the finale, when they all go up in flames, it's like, okay, no, this is awesome.
Yeah. This is one of those things where, like, if this attraction actually existed, I would actively seek it out. I'm like, oh, it's outside Amsterdam. I'm going to Amsterdam. Like, this is like, like, I've done road trips specifically, like following roadside America, like all those, like, you know, those weird, like random signs, like, hey, stop and see the two-headed snake thing or whatever, you know, like I've gone on road trips specifically to see weird shit like that. Like, this is exactly like my jam. And I mean, maybe I like it that much more because of that, because it's got that weirdness that really appeals to me, because it's sort of much more out of the box than a lot of movies in this genre are. So maybe I'm being more forgiving to it, but I think there's just so, like, the end is just like you mentioned, when the doctor can't save Elfie because Hans and his friend get there in time and they save Lisa Lette. and he grabs Elfie's dead body, and her face is, Elfie's face is just like,
dude, she, all the actresses in this play dead so well.
Yeah.
Like all of them, like they keep their eyes open or they might be closed, but they're so still. And it's kind of like with all those mummified, you know, dummies that are throughout this film, I'm like, is that really the actress or is that just some sort of like face mask? Like this looks too real. And especially with Elfie, cause she would have like one eye open, propped open, like peeking down off dead. Like,
yeah,
it was like really real.
Yeah. She like legitimately, especially like the end when like her father carries her up the stairs and she's just kind of like laying there and she's got one eye open and one eye half open. And like her face is kind of drooping, like it's lost its elasticity or something. It's just, it's fucking great. And then he sets his carousel on fire because he's like, fuck it, you're all to blame. And I'm, you know, it's all your fault that I can't save her. And then the carousel starts running, like the fire, like the timbers hit the switch or whatever. And the carousel starts running and it's just that fucking carousel, creepy score on like slow. Like if you're like, you know, playing, like if you got your fingers on a record and like you're playing it extra slow or something like that. And they're all like on fire and they, what would have been great is if they completely melted down and then it just ended with like all these skeletons on fire, but it didn't quite get to that.
Yeah. That's what I was. Yeah. As soon as Wall started going mad, and that actor is amazing. Like he sold it for me. What was his name? Herbert Bohm.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about him. I don't know if he had real eyebrows too, but his eyebrows were like super bushy and like I couldn't stop staring at him. But yeah, at the end he starts knocking shit over. And as soon as he like, you know, in frustration, cause he can't save his daughter, but in frustration, he knocks over the fire. And that's when I knew, okay, the end is coming. It's like every Hammer horror film, every Hammer film.
Yeah.
Okay. The fire, it's just a sign that the film's coming to an end here, guys. Let's all get real here.
Yeah.
Cause everything just goes up in flames. And then, yeah, he carries Elfie up kind of to the loft area. And then he walks upon the redheaded girl who was, you know, who did save Elfie's life earlier. They mm-hmm. did the blood transfusion thing. They turned her into one of those carousel, you know, carousel girls. And her head ends up falling off. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hans and Ralph are like checking shit. You know, they're like, oh, that looks like Annie Laurie, I think was her name.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of walk over to the dummy and the head just falls off and Ralph picks it up and he's all, oh, and like drops it. He's all, it's a severed head. But that head was just sitting in front of Professor Wall's, like as he was walking through with Elfie, puts her down on the ground and he's like yelling in frustration. And I wanted so badly for him to just kick that head in frustration, just fucking shit, you know? And but when the fire was going, I was wanting it to end, like you said, I wanted Elfie to go up in frames and I wanted to see, you know, Professor Wong, you know, getting burned alive. I think that would have like kicked up and elevated that horror element at the end.
I mean, like we know it happened, but like they cut to credits, like at the end, like the fire is consuming everything and it just sort of pans away from the father and Elfie, but.
Well, yeah, then it goes to Hans and Ralph and what's her face? Lisa on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it had to end with that, didn't it?
I mean.
That's just me being nitpicky. I mean, like you said, there's so much cool things to look at and a lot of cool moments, I mean, in this film. But I think it is definitely slow paced, definitely sluggish. And I think it could have worked at like a 60 or 70 minute runtime. I feel like there was a lot of filler that just didn't need to be needed, like didn't have to be there.
I think Hans's fever dream went on a little bit longer than it needed to. But I mean, otherwise, like, I think there's a few parts here and there that, sure, I'd concede like a few of those things could be trimmed. One thing that we forgot to mention, like towards the end, is like what happens to the doctor. So he and the professor are getting it set up because they've kidnapped Lisalette. They've figured out like her blood is like the exact right type of blood that will cure Elfie. And they've got the whole thing set up. And the doctor tells the professor, he says, hey, so you're not going to necessarily need me anymore because this is going to cure Elfie. So I want a payment And the doc's like, yeah, or the professor's like, yeah, sure, I'll pay you. And he says, no, I want Elfie. I want her to be my wife. And yeah. The dad, and this is kind of where, like, what we talked about with, yeah, he wants her to himself. Like everyone just kind of wants Elfie because of, you know, she's beautiful and sheltered and all that, all those other reasons. So the dad actually ends up killing the doctor. He stabs him. Mm-hmm. And in that sort of tussle, the serum that is needed to be mixed into the blood transfusion machine to make it a permanent cure, that gets destroyed in that. Like, it gets broken, like the syringe gets broken. And so there's no way now for him to cure his daughter. So he grabs her and runs off, and the doctor is dead on the ground.
Yeah, that Dr. Bolum. And he had an interesting backstory, too, that they kind of hint on, but, you know, like when he was asking for pretty much Elfie as compensation for, you know, keeping her alive for the last, I think he said 3 years, but that he really did love her. The doctor started calling him a loathsome criminal, and you'd be rotten in prison without me, you know? And I'm like, what did they mention something that I missed? Was he some sort of criminal? Was he some sort of doctor that did strange things? I don't think
they mentioned anything about that earlier. If they did, it was in passing and I missed it as well, but it would have been interesting to see that, like, get developed a little bit more, like, because Hans has been like, he comes to the windmill initially because he's there to write a piece about the carousel. So they put him up, basically he's there to stay for, I think, 5 days. And they give him all these sort of like documents to read through. And so it might have been interesting for Hans to start piecing some of those things together, or for us to maybe get some of the background of the doctor or something along those lines.
Or like Elfie's condition. What was it? What was she?
She got a blood disease.
Yeah, but that makes her die and get old and come back to life.
I don't know. Why are you trying to put on some logic on my movie?
Well, no, because it was very, you know, it's kind of like a vampire type thing too. But then I realized, well, she can't be a vampire because she's only had, they said that it was the same affliction her mother had. So I was really interested when I heard that too. I was like, okay, we got to figure out what this is. But they never really explain what it is, and other than some sort of
blood disease. Yeah, I think it was just some blood disease. She's got to, like, you need to have an excuse to have a laboratory in the cellar of your windmill and a blood transfusion machine that makes an oven bell ding sound when it's ready to pump.
Yeah, they're always like looking up at the clock, like, okay, now we can administer it while it was happening.
Yeah.
But it reminded me of, it's a Hammer film, Terrence Fisher's The Man Who Could Cheat Death.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's about a doctor who is also a sculptor, and he kills and removes glands from his victims, like, in order to stay young and healthy. I think he was like, he came across like 30 or 34 years old in the, you know, the character in the movie, but he was actually like 140 or something.
Yeah. Something like that.
And it doesn't really, you know, if I remember correctly, it never really hints on like what he was or what that was. It's just some sort of weird disease that if he doesn't have the serum that he actually has to get from these victims' glands, he just quickly ages and dies, which reminded me of Elfie.
Isn't it like in that movie, isn't it like bright green, like reanimator fluid too? Am I remembering it right? Okay.
Yeah, he opens like a safe and it like glows on him, I remember. And then when he turns old, it's literally like, I don't know, like they put black under his eyes, you know, it's really, it's poor makeup. But this was more effective because Elfie just looked so dead when she died.
She really fucking does.
I was like, this, it had to be like a plaster mask, like just in a dummy, because she was too good at it.
Well, besides the dad, I think my second favorite character is probably the little dog.
Oh, that little rat dog.
It looked like a greyhound chihuahua. It was fucking adorable. And it doesn't die.
they don't explain that either. It's like the sound when Elfie first appears as the character, you know, the first few times, like you hear the jingle of the dog collar, and usually it's Hans looking around, and then this little dog with its tail between its legs, just like shaking, pops out. And then there's Elfie like peeking out behind a curtain.
Yeah. It's cute.
I wish the dog had a name.
I hope it made it out of the fire. I'm going to assume that it did. Dogs are smart.
Oh, that's a good, yeah. I don't know. I don't think it did.
I don't want to know. Bomber scene. All right, fine.
See, that's why I dislike this movie. No.
Oh.
I don't dislike it. I don't dislike the movie, but the main thing is they killed a dog.
I'm not logging this on doesadogdie.com. There's no on-screen verification that it's dead. It made it out alive. It's got a happy new home across the River Styx with a nice family. It's all good.
I like that. So, yeah, that's good.
All right. So, I mean, you said you liked it. What did you rate it on Letterboxd?
I gave it 3 stars.
Okay.
So I would watch it again. It's a very deliberate, slow pace, like gothic horror. And it literally takes like 45 minutes to really get going. At least it did for me. I love the intro. The first like 2 minutes is cool. And then there were just these boring characters that never really kind of went anywhere for me. And I know it was all story set up, but I do think it could have been trimmed down. The dialogue was, I know it's 60s, but the dialogue was so dramatic. Like when Elfie first sees Hans, she's like, I have to see you, you know, I love you, I want to be with you forever. And then it's just very, it was a little too dramatic for my taste.
Fair enough.
But the original score was great. I feel like that was there to kind of remind me that I'm watching a horror and not some weird, sappy, like love triangle thing between Lisa and Elfie and Hans. And then the creepy mannequin, dummy statue, dead people, mummified people. That was just, you know, icing on the cake. And then of course that last scene, that's what makes it like actually sitting through. If you're thinking it's like, okay, this isn't going anywhere. Getting to that last scene when the fire starts and those mummified corpses are burning, it makes it completely worth the watch.
So if you were going to put this in a double feature, what would you bill it with or program it with?
I would bill it with that Hammer film, Terrence Fisher's The Man Who Could Cheat Death.
Okay.
1959. Keep it close together. A lot of similarities, but yeah, I think that'd be a fun pairing.
I'd watch that.
The Man Who Could Cheat Death is only 80 minutes long, so it could be paired with anything. It's a great Hammer film.
Yes. Hard agree. So I gave this 4 stars on Letterboxd. I love this movie. When the Blu-ray comes out, I will buy it immediately and invite Lance over and make him rewatch it. You'll like it. But there was one review on Letterboxd that called this phlegmsploitation. And I'm just going to put this out in the universe. Can we please not overuse attaching exploitation to any subgenre, folks? Like that's not a thing. Like it's not an exploitation film. Do that. Stop it.
Phlegmsploitation?
Yeah. Like Flemish exploitation.
Okay. I don't know why I was thinking of like
yeah.
Like I was like thinking back, what did I miss? Like, there's a good part I missed here.
Yeah, it's not that. Yeah. That probably, oh God, I hope that genre doesn't actually exist.
I'm sure it does.
It's probably the trauma movie.
That's a good call.
If I was going to pair this in a double feature, I think House of Wax is probably like an obvious choice and would probably bring more people in. But I think what I would really like to see would be a double feature with this and The Horrible Dr. Hitchcock from 1962. Oh. Have you seen this?
I haven't, no.
Okay, so we have a necrophile doctor. He has a wife, and he injects her with something to make her almost dead for when they have sex. But then one time he gives her too much, and she actually does die. And instead of just, you know, deciding like, well, maybe I'll just keep her around for a few days and keep fucking that corpse. He preserves her, ends up getting remarried with the intent of using his new bride's love to bring his old wife back to life.
Oh, okay.
So if you're not put off by necrophilia, I'm not, you should watch it.
I'm in. Yeah. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
62, you said?
1962. Yeah. It's got Barbara Steele in it. I don't know. That should be like a fucking no-brainer for anybody. Yeah.
She's not the first wife, I hope.
She is the first wife. Sorry.
Okay. No, I'm in.
She gets fucked like a corpse. I'm sorry, folks, but... Okay, so recommendations from both of us, me a little bit more so.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would like to point out is I think it's due for a remake. That's all I'm going to throw out there. Let's do it. No fan of, you're not a fan of remakes at all.
I can count on one hand the number of remakes that I like. And
I just think there's so much potential in this story that just put it, just give it to me. Put it in my hands. I feel like I can fix it.
Okay. All right.
I'm just going to do a re-edit of the actual original. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. I mean.
No, okay. You don't agree. It's fine.
I'm not agreeing with you. I'm just like saying that's fine. Whatever. That's your opinion. Yeah. That's just your opinion, man. I'm whatever. Okay. So let's talk about what we're going to be watching for our next episode. Lance, it's your pick. What are we watching?
We're going to watch Primal Rage, 1988, directed by Vittorio Rimbaldi. It's okay. an Italian-American horror written by Umberto Lenzi.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So it's about, just a quick synopsis, it's about a college professor who stars Bo Svenson.
Okay.
And he's researching how to revitalize damaged brain cells, and he's doing tests on a baboon. This baboon bites a student, which turns him like into this vicious killer, and he starts causing havoc on campus and biting other students. So, you know, all these students are just, you know, running wild. It also stars Patrick Lowe, who's the hunk in Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Oh,
and he's the campus journalist. I think those are like his only two credits, really. Oh, okay. But he plays a campus journalist, and he and his girlfriend and Bo Svenson's character kind of work together to stop the spread of this virus that are turning these people and students into these super strength killing machines.
Okay.
It has great gore, great practical effects. And it also, the finale takes place during a Halloween party. So watching Primal Rage should get you into the Halloween spirit. And it has an amazing Claudio Simonetti soundtrack to keep you entertained while you're watching this. It's extremely perverted film. There's a lot of, it's kind of like a lot of raunchy comments and actions are made throughout this film, so be forewarned.
Sold.
But yeah, it's fun. But it's available free on YouTube. You could watch it there. And it also has a Blu-ray release by Dark Force Entertainment.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. I hope the baboon doesn't die, but it's an Italian film, so we'll see. But it's 88, so maybe, well, you never know. We'll see.
I know it happens.
Don't. Okay, don't let me know. If you're following us on social, Instagram or Twitter, you already know this. But for those who don't know yet, we have put together a 31-day charity movie challenge for the month of October. It is a different horror movie category for every day of the month. Categories range from stuff like giallo or horror comedy to maybe a little more focus like LGBTQ or back to school, to actor specific like Peter Cushing. So check out the list. We have that posted on Instagram. It's pinned on Twitter. Pick the movies that you want to watch for those categories and start watching. Share your picks every day if you want and tag us, Unsung Horrors or hashtag Unsung Horrors, and use the hashtag Horror Gives Back because we'd love to see what everyone is watching for this. The reason that it is called the Horror Gives Back Challenge is that we're encouraging participants to donate a chosen amount per movie that they watch to charity. So Lance and I are both going to be doing this challenge in October and then making our donations to the charities that we chose on November 1st. As an added incentive for you, we're also having a giveaway for people who participate and donate as well as share the challenge with their followers on social. We're going to have three prize packages, including a few movies, books, including the out-of-print Cosmic Wisdom of Joe Bob Briggs, artwork by Lance's twin, Cody Scheibe, who did our logo, and I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with already, some horror pins that Lance created, and also a 2001 Army of Darkness Ash versus Pit Witch action figure set from Movie Maniacs. It is still in the box. I may have, I'm looking through my boxes right now to see if I've got some other action figures to throw in there. But we'll be announcing winners in our bonus episode dropping November 5th when Lance and I are going to be going through all of our picks for the Horror Gives Back Challenge. All the details that you need about the challenge, the categories, how to enter, those are posted on our social media. So be sure to check those out, share with your friends. We would love to see as many people as possible watching horror movies for a good cause this October. So again, that's Unsung Horrors on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can also follow my Letterboxd account. I'm under Also Watched. I also have another podcast called Customers Also Watch, which is basically just watching, following movies on the suggested list of movies on Amazon Prime. That's CAW Podcast on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram at Customers Also Watched. And Lance, where can folks find and follow you?
Find me anywhere at L Scheibe. That's LSCHIBI on Instagram, Twitter, or Letterboxd.
Awesome. You can also check out Lance's store. That's lancescheibe.bigcartel.com, where he's got some of his pins, other horror prints, and tons of other cool stuff you can check out. Perfect for October, for a holiday season.
Yes.
All right. So we will see you back next episode for Primal Rage. I'm excited. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Riding along on a carousel, trying to catch up to you. Riding along on a carousel, will I catch up to you? Horses chasing, cause they're racing, so near, so far. She drives.